Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Tazria Metzora, or to be more specific, this week in Israel, it's Tazria Metzora. For people who live outside of Israel, it's Shmini. In Israel, we are already one parsha ahead, and that will go on for a little while. That's because the eighth day of Pesach, celebrated outside of Israel, was on Shabbat, and you had the special reading for Pesach, for the last day of Pesach. Here in Israel, Pesach was already over, so we continued on with the Torah cycle. This means that in Israel, we'll be 1 week ahead for a while, and at that point, I believe around Chukot, at that point, outside of Israel, you'll have a double portion to catch up with us here in Israel. So in any case, we'll be following the Israeli schedule, and this podcast is on Tazria Metzora with Rabbi James Jacobson Meisels. Rabbi James Jacobson Meisels is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi James Jacobson Meisels.
Thank you, Larry. Parsha this week is Tazria Metzora, which is a parsha which deals, to a great extent, with skin disease, what we often call leprosy, but not leprosy as we normally understand it, some kind of outbreak, some kind of disease of the skin. And one of the classic questions, of course, is what is the cause? What's happening? How come this disease develops in the biblical narrative and in the rabbinic imagination? So what I'd like to do is briefly look at a few small midrashim from Vayikra Rabba, one of the earliest midrashic compilations on Vayikra, on Leviticus, and what they describe are the reasons for this outbreak, this plague, and then to think about how the Torah describes the solution for it, and what we might learn from that. We start with one text from Vayikra Rabba, 16:5, which says, Devar Acher, another teaching, another midrashic teaching, Zotia Torah Tamitzora. This is the teaching of the person who has tzarat, leprosy, or the skin disease. Hachu Dichtiv, as it says, Al Titenet Picha Lachti et Bisarecha. It says in Kohelet and Ecclesiastes, do not allow your mouth to cause your flesh to sin. Right? That is, the Midrash makes the connection between what is the problem of the Torah to Mitzorah. There's some connection between speaking. And the classic example of this from the tradition is Lashon Hara, evil speech. And this is attributed to Miriam. That when we speak improperly, some of this brings on the plague. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Patar kriya be'elu sheposkim tzedakah berabim ve'ein nonin. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, he solved this or answered this question by saying it applies to those who declare in public that they're going to give charity, but in fact do not give. The Midrash goes on and also connects it. For instance, Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa, Amar Ba'elin She'omrim Lashon Hara, which is one of the classic descriptions, those who speak evilly of others, who gossip, slander. And then this is applied in the following teaching to Miriam. But I'm interested, first of all, in this first teaching. The teaching, which is that you're promising to do something, you're promising charity, but then actually, perhaps you had a good intention at first, but you stop. You refuse to do it. You turn away. Another midrash in Vayikra Rabba, 17:2, teaches the following. Haruhu dichtiv. Yigel yavul beito nigorot b'yom apo. It's written in comparison to this introductory verse about the issue of Metzora. The produce, the increase of his house shall depart. His goods shall be nigorot, dragged away, b'yom apo, in the day of his wrath, from Eov, from Job. Classic midrashic style, they're comparing these two verses, and they ask, what does this mean? Yu gorin umotzin. They will be pulled out, taken away, and found. Ematai when? B'yom shigra kodesh baruch hu apo b'oto ish. When? When the day when Hashem becomes angry with the person. Haketzad? How does this happen? Adam omer l'chaveru Hashileni kav chitim. A person says to his friend, please lend to me a kav, which is a certain measurement, of wheat. Now, the context is not, could be that they're just missing it, doesn't have to happen in that moment, needs a bowl of sugar. But often, in the rabbinic sense, when we're talking about borrowing things, it also often has the meaning of, I'm impoverished in some way, or lacking, or really need this. Vamarlo ainli. And he says to him, I don't have, even though the subject says he does have. Kav sorim ainli. Kav tamarim ainli. Says, well, give me then a kav of barley. He says, I don't have. He says, give to me a kav of dates. He said, I don't have. Isha omer lechaverta, a woman says to her friend, Hashileni nefa. She says, lend me a sieve. He omerit ainli. Hashileni kivra. For omerit ainli. Right? She says, lend me a sifter. No, I don't have. Ma karash baruch hu oseh, migareg nigaim betoch beto. What does God do? He brings this leprosy, this plague, this difficulty, this outbreak onto his house. Umetoch shehu motzi et kelav, habriot ra'ot v'amrot, lo haya omer ein li, klum. Ru'u kama chitim yeshkan. And what happens? When he has to take all the things out of his house and break down his house, as he's instructed to do, the people around him see and they say, he said he didn't have. But see how much wheat he has, and how much barley he has, and how much all these other things he has. So now we have a second example. This example is, again, some example of you're asked to give, right? In the first situation, person intends to give but actually rescinds his word. And in this situation, a person is asked for help in some way, and they have the capacity to help. They can help, but they actually refuse to help. They turn away. The following midrash says, Al asara devarim negeim ba'im. There are 10 things which cause this outbreak, this plague, to happen. To have your house be covered with this leprosy, this plague, this outbreak. I'm not going to read all 10, but a few of them, again, I think are directly relevant to our discussion we have. It says, one al shvichut damim, on the spilling of blood, on violence, right? When we attack and hurt somebody in some way. Hagozel et harabim, one who robs the public, right? So you, perhaps, and they go into an explanation what that might mean, and using of hekdesh, but really, before we get to that explanation, it can mean many things. It could mean, right, cheating on your taxes, defrauding somebody, stealing something that's public property. Val gozel et she'eno shalo, the one who takes that which he has no right. One interpretation that is a certain dignity or honor. Al lashon hara, on improper speech, slanderous speech, harmful speech, as we saw above. Val ayin hara, and then an evil eye, right? On miserliness, on unwillingness to share. And there are, of course, other interpretations of this. These are not the only interpretations of this plague, this sin. But what's interesting about the elements that we saw, I think, one thing that struck me about these midrashim, is that they all deal with a certain kind of closed-heartedness. We're asked to give something, we're asked to provide something, and instead of doing so, we hold back, and in response, we are afflicted with something. Now, there's a way of thinking about this, as I think, you know, the biblical text perhaps does, or certainly the rabbinic text does in certain ways, as a sort of standard model of schar v'onesh, of reward and punishment. You do something, and in response, you're punished by the divine for some kind of improper action. But in Kabbalistic texts, this understanding is often transformed less into a question of reward and punishment, and more into a question of kind of cause and effect. According to the Kabbalistic texts, we have a profound and direct impact on divinity, a divinity which is broken and in need of our healing. And when we act in ways which actually increase that brokenness, it naturally brings a certain kind of brokenness, illness, destruction, loss into the world. And we are affected, particularly when we are the cause of that, in a particular way, and we experience the results of that brokenness, or that loss, or that illness, or that suffering. The Zohar, for instance, interprets the promises and punishments of the Shema. Vasitam otam, if you do the mitzvot, you'll have certain things will happen to you, certain positive things will happen to you. Not as reward and punishment, but actually as simply the natural result of acting a certain way in the universe, sort of returning in a sort of cosmic sense that which you've done. Similarly, Rebbe Meir Ibn Gabay, 14th century Kabbalist, teaches that our whole structure is somehow deeply attuned with divinity, and when we open ourselves in the proper ways, which is acting in the proper ways to divinity, we receive divine flow and blessing and shefa, which is overflow. And when we don't, we close ourselves off and we back ourselves into a corner of sickness and destruction and suffering. There's no reward and punishment. There's simply an attunement or lack of attunement with the actual nature of what is happening in that moment. These texts provide an alternative way to read these rabbinic midrashim. As we're talking here, not about reward and punishment, perhaps, but we're simply talking about what happens when we close our heart. When we close our heart, when we declare we're going to do something and refuse, when we don't provide that which we can provide, when we respond with violence, or with hatred, or with taking that which has not been given to us, we acquire certain sicknesses of the heart because that's simply, in some sense, perhaps, the natural order of things. And our Parsha then says that actually to respond to this, there are three potential steps that one can go through. To remove the plague from our homes, and in our understanding here, perhaps to remove the plague from our hearts. So the first step, it says, is in chapter 14, verse 48, V'yatzah kohen min habayit, el petach habayit, v'yiskirat habayit shivat yamim. The first thing the priest does is just shuts up the house for 7 days. And then afterwards, v'shava kohen b'yom ha-shvi'i, v'ra'ah v'hine pashata nega b'kirat ha-bayit. And then the kohen, the priest, returns after 7 days and sees, and in this case, he sees the plague has indeed spread on the walls of the house. But presumably, if he shuts it up for 7 days and the plague has not spread, then there's no problem. And so the first step is really that step of introspection, to sort of stop for a moment, to cease, to close ourselves off, and to look inside and to see what's there. And often just that stopping itself, the investigating, the seeing wasn't present, is enough to not be lost anymore in our closed-heartedness. Just looking at our closed-heartedness. Just seeing where it's coming from. Just not getting lost in our habitual patterns of response, but actually taking the moment to reflect on what our life looks like and what it should look like, can simply be enough to already change that process. To allow the plague not to take hold, to our hard-heartedness, our closed-heartedness, not to continue. But of course, sometimes that is not enough. And if it's not enough, what happens next? V'tzifa kohen v'chutzu et avanim asher behen anega v'ishlichu eten el michutz le'ir el mikom temeh. So what happens? The priest then comes and commands that these stones with the plague in them have to be pulled out and thrown outside the city into an unclean place. And he continues, V'tabayit yakzia mibayit saviv v'shafchot afar asher yiktzu el michutz le'ir el mikom temeh. And then the house also has to be scraped inside and around, and the dust which is scraped off, the coating that is scraped off, what's covering the house, shall be thrown, dumped outside the city in an unclean place. So the next step is to see if there is something specific that we can kind of remove. We notice that hard-heartedness and we investigate perhaps a little bit, well, what's actually going on in there? What is in there? Why did I say I was going to contribute this money to charity, but I actually haven't done so? Am I scared that if I contribute, I won't have enough? Do I have an unrealistic expectation of what I need? Do I feel a sense of lack? Do I feel that I'll never have enough? Why did I speak badly about that person? Why did I refuse to share? Am I harboring anger or resentment? Am I feeling hard done by or treated unfairly? Am I just feeling angry or ornery or in a bad mood? whatever the causes are, it may be that we can pause for a few moments and actually notice what's actually happening in this process of our hearts and our minds and our body. What's actually stopping us right now from acting the ways that we would really want to act, from speaking the ways we want to speak, from being generous in the ways we would want to be generous, from refraining from hurting others, from speaking badly of others, from damaging others? What's actually causing us to act in those damaging ways or not to act in ways which are positive? And perhaps there's a way to actually remove that from ourselves, to cleanse ourselves in some ways. In many ways, this is the process of Pesach that we just went through. We try to cleanse ourselves from this process of chametz, of leavening, of the sarah shebi'isa, the leavening of the dough, which the rabbis famously compared to our yetzirah, which compared to our ego, right? To our place of sort of self-concern and self-preservation as our primary motivation. So it may be that there's an opportunity to see how we've gone wrong and to cleanse it out, to open it, to move it forward, to change it in some way. And then if it looks like that can work, if we can take those things out and it's doing okay, the next verse tells us, V'lachu avanim acharot, ve'ivyu al tachat avanim, v'afar achar yikach v'tachat abayit. Then they shall take other stones, and they put them in place of the other stones, right? So they replace the stones. And this dust, this coating, this plastering, they take, and they plaster the house with it. Okay, so you've removed the kind of stones which are poisonous in some ways, which are damaging. Our selfishness, our fear, our anger, our resentment. We've made some attempt to sort of create some space for it to cleanse it out. And of course, that cleansing can be a very difficult process. It can take sometimes real serious work with ourselves, with friends, in therapy, with meditation, right? They're not easy to change these patterns in ourselves. And sometimes they change by us actually committing ourselves to a certain course of behavior, and the behavior itself creating a certain type of change in our personality, in our hearts, and in our minds. But in this case, we've done it successfully. We've created some space. And then we need to replace new stones and new coating. And again, this is an opportunity on this reading, which happens many times in our lives. We have an opportunity to shift, to leave behind some habitual pattern. And the question is, what replaces it? Do we just allow some other habitual pattern to take its place? Do we allow our old habitual pattern to return? Do we actually consciously replace it with new things? Do we replace it with feelings of love and generosity, with prayer, with Torah study, with habits and ways of behavior that are going to foster an open-hearted existence rather than an existence of closed-heartedness? In many ways, I would say this is the opposite. If one of the paradigmatic examples of what causes the negatzarat, the plague of this outbreak of skin outbreak and or of fungal outbreak, whatever it is on the houses, if improper speech is the cause, perhaps one of the fundamental cures is proper speech. And perhaps the fundamental model of that in our tradition is prayer. Prayer is healing, transformative speech. Prayer is where we say, Ahava Rabba Avtanu. You have loved us with great love, with surpassing compassion. Prayer is where we acknowledge the awesomeness of divinity, our gratitude, our belovedness, our love, our commitment to love others, as the Ariya Kadosh, the Rabbi Yitzhak Luria, the 16th century Kabbalist, said, introduced the practice into the Jewish community, and many of us dream of taking on the commandment each morning, Hareni Mikabel Alai et Mitzvat Aseh Ve'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha. I accept upon myself the positive commandment of loving my neighbor as myself. Or we say other blessings in the morning, reminding us of the purity of our souls, Elohai Neshama Shenatata B'Tahorai. My God, the soul you have given me is pure. In all of these cases, we are using the words of prayer to actually cultivate a different open-hearted way of being, a way which is full of thankfulness, which is full of recognizing that we are not in control, but there's something larger than us that we can reach out to help see us and to help fulfill our basic needs and desires, that there is a place for prayer and understanding, there's a place for connecting to the generations who came before us, that there are these many ways that we can use language to transform ourselves, to heal ourselves and to heal others and to open our hearts rather than using language to damage ourselves and others. But sometimes, even these two steps don't work. And so we get the third step. And the psukim, the verses continue. V'im yashuv hanega ufarach b'bayit achar chilets et avanim v'acharei hikzot et habayit v'acharei atoach. But if the plague returns and spreads out in the house after you've pulled out the stones and after you've scraped and replastered the house, ubako im v'ra'a v'hine pashata nega b'bayit tarat mam eret hi b'bayit tamehu, then the priest comes and sees that yes, indeed, this plague has spread throughout the house, then it's really tzarat, and the house is unclean. V'natat et abayit, et avnav, et etzav, et kol afar abayit. And then you have to actually tear down the house. The stones, the wood, all the coating, the plaster, the dust. V'otzi al michutz la'ir makom tamen. You take it out of the city to an impure place. So if the first two steps fail, if we can't actually just take out certain parts and replace them and cultivate new qualities, then sometimes what we have to do is actually just tear down the walls. We have to allow ourselves to fall apart in a certain ways. We have to allow ourselves to be destroyed. We have to take this home, these parts of ourselves, or defenses which shelter us from the elements and prevent what's outside from getting in. We have to take our hearts, which at this moment are acting as barriers, which are keeping the pains of others out, which are shut and unwilling to be touched by the pain of the world and opened in generosity, we have to allow them to really break open. It means we really stop protecting ourselves. It means we really allow our hearts and our defensiveness to shatter. We allow our wallets to open, our voices to lift up in praise and in compassion, our pens to lift up in healing action. Only then is this tikkun, this sort of transformation of the house, possible. Or, as we say in the laws of kashrut, there are certain kinds of vessels when they become impure, not kosher, the only way to litakenotam, to transform them, to heal them, is actually to break them. Now this, of course, can be very powerful and very challenging and very scary. But perhaps we've had moments in our lives where for a moment we felt broken, broken apart, broken down, broken open. And if you related wisely to those moments, perhaps in those moments, you notice there were moments of your greatest transformation, our greatest change, our greatest coming closer to the kind of person we really most fundamentally want to be. And that's really the opportunity, I would say here, of this nega tzarat, this plague. It's like Rashi says on his commentary on this tzarat of the house, he says it's not a plague, but it's a bracha, it's a blessing. Because it allows us to find the treasure which is hidden within our home. And if this plague of the house is the plague of the heart, and it's the plague of the closed heart, heart closing in response to the difficulty and suffering of the world and closing in a lack of compassion, then the possibility is that the willingness to allow our heart to break open, to really be broken down, is an opportunity for healing. It's like the psalm says, Karov Hashem l'shvurei lev, that God is close to those who are brokenhearted. And the opportunity of tzarat is to be brokenhearted. So perhaps what the Midrash is suggesting here in the process of repair that the Torah tells us about is that when we notice these plagues in us, when we notice our hearts shutting down, when we notice our speaking in ways which are not productive, which are not helpful, but are harmful in some ways, when we notice our own tendencies for revenge, for violence, for hurts, for damage, that perhaps we can go through this three-step process. Perhaps we can stop first and investigate what is truly the case at this moment. Perhaps we can see if there's a way to cleanse ourselves of that piece which is damaging or difficult and replace it with a healthy stone, healthy plaster, one of compassion and generosity, of presence, of a passion for justice and love. And if that all fails, perhaps we have the strength and willingness, despite the fear, to allow ourselves to really fall apart, to allow our hearts to break open, and in that moment, to bring the healing which is sometimes only possible through brokenness.
Thank you, Rabbi Jacobson Meisel. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode. of Pardes from Jerusalem.